Hello, everyone. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 38 of Brody Sports Talk. It came, it happened, and it was wonderful, and we will tell you about what happened in Las Vegas. This is a Super Bowl recap episode of Brody Sports Talk. I am, of course, joined by a man who wishes that the team that played in Vegas did not exist. That is Captain Orange. Derek, how are you doing today, bud?
Oh, I am doing really well. I have just recently watched a great football game, and I would love to give you my thoughts on it.
Well, we will have plenty of thoughts to give and take and go back and forth about as we jump into this. Derek, let's start by just going through some of the plays that I would say probably aren't anyone's favorite. Well, maybe the defenses, but these are some plays that were a bit sloppy. One thing can be said for sure is that while we didn't hear anyone saying that the field was sloppy, like people were able to get their pass rush going, they were able to move where they needed to move, thank goodness. But there was people putting the ball where they shouldn't. The first one happened barely 2 minutes into the game as McCaffrey on a first and 10 down in the maroon zone, as I like to call it, that area, not quite the red zone. He had the ball popped out by Leo Chenal, and George Karloftis jumped on it for the Chiefs, making McCaffrey look like a contender for someone who you didn't really want to see giving something up on a drive that was all McCaffrey. Derek, what was your thoughts early in the game when you saw the Chiefs pop this ball out from Christian?
Yeah, so this was happening at the very beginning of the game, you know, around the 12:24 mark. So we're only a couple minutes into the game. Hey, there's a lot of running going on. Okay, good. This is exactly what needs to happen. I think that that the line is going to hold up most of the game. You're starting it early, and then all of a sudden, boop, you cannot give Patrick Mahomes extra possessions. And a lot of times that means, oh, okay, well, they're going to go down and score. They're going to go down and you're going to give them an extra chance to kick a field goal or score a touchdown. In this case, it's another chance for the offensive gurus in that building to figure out your defense. So even three plays for Patrick Mahomes pays off toward the end of the game.
Absolutely. You never want to give Mahomes extra chances. One time where a chance was taken away from him, though, was early in the second quarter when the Chiefs running back, Isaiah Pacheco, followed up a beautiful deep ball by Patrick Mahomes, which kind of at least made me go, okay, here come the Chiefs. The Chiefs are doing their thing. Pacheco gets it, runs off the left side of the field, isn't getting any yards. I saw the ball pop out and hit the ground, and I went, that's a fumble. Demador Lenore, apologies if I'm not quite getting the name right, forced the fumble, and it was recovered by Javon Hargrave. At this point, the 49ers did have a nice 3-0 lead, and it kind of felt like, oh, dang, because at this point it was, man, if the 49ers hadn't fumbled early, they could be up a lot, and they're shutting the Chiefs down quite a bit, and now the Chiefs actually had some momentum, and they fumbled it in the red zone. Derek, what were your thoughts, or what did you think about this play?
It scared the snot out of me because, like you said, big, huge play. You had the defense on the heels, like they were at a source just a little bit. And then Pacheco puts it on the ground, and you're like, oh, my goodness, that's a stop to that one. That is some points for the Chiefs, even, you know, tying it up and getting it to 3-3. It's a huge swing with momentum. And some people don't believe in momentum. I do. I think that, one thing leads to another.
Absolutely, it does. Absolutely. Well, Derek, do you want to tell us about the next sloppy play that started early there in the second half?
Yeah, so we have around the 13:38 of the third quarter, so right after halftime, a very inconvenient, a very un-Patrick Mahomes-like play as he overthrows Kelce and puts it into the hands of a San Francisco defender. I don't have here my notes on who actually picked that off, but Mahomes throws an interception, and that, once again, it is because it's such a close game. You're at a 10-3 deficit at that point. Right after halftime, it's kind of worrisome. Like, okay, this second half is just not going to go your way. It's going to be lower scoring game, stuff like that. But, it was an overthrow by Mahomes, and he got chased around a lot by that defensive line, and you can put the ball in the defender's hands.
The name that I have here is Jair Brown, which I had to find the phonetic saying of that, so I don't blame you on that one bit, Derek. I know that sometimes you like for me to say those funny names or names that are a little harder to say, but that's okay. Mahomes throwing a pick, coming in, and that was, right after there was a bad snap where Pacheco recovered it and they had lost a bunch of yards on first down. So it was not the start to the second half the Chiefs wanted as they were trying to build some momentum. But Derek, sometimes people like to say that football can be a game of inches. At this point, I would have to say that football was a game of feet.
Feet, certainly. We're talking about this is toward the end of the third quarter. It's about 2.5 minutes left in the third. Tommy Townsend, probably, if you could give it to a punter, might be the MVP of the Super Bowl, above everybody else that, played the game. He had some excellent punts, and the special teams really were special. But in this particular case, he punts it off, and you have Ray McLeod back there, who is a very good punt returner, and is in charge of the return team, basically. And you see him waving, hey, get away, hey, get away. I'm sure he's probably yelling out their special word that you say, hey, get away from the ball. And the punt comes down, hits Luter in the foot, and Ray, because of how it careened off of his guy, McLeod tries to pick it up. He doesn't even have a chance to like really jump on it because of like where it's shooting to, and so it's I don't think it's technically a muffed punt when he tried to pick it up, but it hits Luter's foot. The Chiefs get the ball, and one play later, the Chiefs are on the 16-yard line. Mahomes puts it in for their touchdown, and gets them on the board for the lead at that point.
Absolutely. And the last really kind of sloppy thing that happened in this game, Derek, was unfortunately one where the rookie Jake Moody went out and missed his point after attempt. It actually says that was also blocked by Leo Chenal, who forced the fumble early in the game. So not a great game there for Moody when you're missing a PAT. Great game for Leo Chenal, forcing a fumble from McCaffrey and blocking an extra point. When that happened, Derek, it put the 49ers up 16-13, so they had the lead, but never something that you really want to see from anyone But I feel like this drama is why the PAT got moved back several years ago anyway.
Yeah, so I don't think that's as bad as people are making it out to be. In hindsight, it's very bad because you have a 13-16 game and at that point, and you're you know, Patrick just has to go down the field and kick a field goal to tie it up. But this happened at the 11-22 mark in the fourth quarter. Everyone is expecting another possession or two for both teams. And so, you know, having a 13-16 game when, frankly, the defense is doing its job pretty well, keeping Mahomes together in the first three quarters of the game. So, like, it's bad. At the same time, you don't want your kicker to do that ever.
Yeah. If you can help it, don't let that be what happens. However, there were plenty of great moments in the Super Bowl as well, Derek. Just to go back and go through some of those chronologically as well. The first big one to me happened with under 5 minutes left in the second quarter. And that's when Purdy went back, threw a backwards pass to Juwan Jennings. And then he took it, uncorked it to the other sideline to Christian McCaffrey, who had the right block set up. He was able to go and get in and get the touchdown. Opening touchdown of the game, Christian McCaffrey, not from Brock Purdy. Just the way that all of us thought. I did feel like, especially in the first half of this game, Kyle Shanahan was really taking shots to make sure that his team was getting points. You know, if it was throwing the ball downfield, you know, maybe targeting Samuel or Ayuk, you know, doing a little bit of a trick play here. He was dialing up the right things when he needed to and being aggressive with his offense. Obviously, you know me, I love some trickeration. Derek, what did you think of this play from a Tennessee Volunteer to arguably one of your favorite bandwagon players?
Yeah, so I love the fact that it worked. The issue is it shouldn't have. So that ball was in the air for a good 7.5 minutes in NFL terms. Like, when it went over to from the right side to, well, I mean, the left side to the right side of the offense, how did a Chief player not step in front of that, not knock it down? It just took forever to get there. But that being said, it worked. Christian McCaffrey is an amazing athlete to get through the traffic that was there and to get in the end zone. It all worked. So good on them. It was a great play.
It was a great play. And I can tell you, I hear what you're saying when you're like, that may have worked well, but that was not how it was supposed to go. I will say that I think it was interesting because he did play quarterback in high school. Mm-hmm. He converted to receiver when he was at college. Obviously great size for Juwan Jennings, 6'3", 212. But it's very interesting to just kind of see how all of those things unfold. And you might not be aware of this, Derek, but he is one of the players that is going to be a free agent this coming offseason.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, Juwan Jennings, former seventh rounder, not going to be the deal that he was the last few years. Derek, I know that when we were talking about impact players, you brought up the kickers. We already talked about Moody missing one. Butker, clearly the veteran kicker here. Do you want to talk about the record-setting field goals at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, so we start off the field goal records with a 55-yard by Moody for San Francisco. And then just a little bit after that, we had Butker's break the record of 57 yards. And then later in the game, Moody puts another one up that is 53 yards. So Moody walks away from the Super Bowl with the second and fourth longest field goals in Super Bowl history. I know that, you know, a missed PAT, you know, definitely changed the game, all that kind of stuff. But I'm walking away with my head held high if I'm him. You know, the record books are there. He doesn't have number one, but at the same time, he did a lot of good things in that Super Bowl.
And let's be real. It's kind of a weird record. You'd much rather go get touchdowns, but hey, if you can have a record as a kicker, you want to have a record. So congrats to Butker. I have to give Derek the credit. He called him an impact player. Mm-hmm. The special teams in this game definitely, I don't even want to just say tilted towards the Chiefs. They were slanted towards the Chiefs. The Chiefs definitely won that phase of the game, and it made a whole lot of difference. Derek, if we were picking players to score the first touchdown for the Chiefs in this game, how long would it have taken us to get to Marquez Valdes-Scantling?
Probably the fourth or fifth guy down. I mean, you're talking about Kelsey's number one, Patrick Mahomes' rush is number two, Pacheco's number three, Rice is number four, then probably MVS.
Okay, we could have gotten to Noah Gray, we could have gotten to Justin Watson, Blake Bell rushing touchdown. Like, there's so many various things that you can look at on this list, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I like him. You know, he was a former Packer. He's had, I believe his quote from Media Days is he's had two of the best quarterbacks to play the game throw the ball to him. Yeah, we know. And you still don't do that much with all of that. You know, we're talking about a player who, for his career with six seasons between Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes, only has 186 receptions. He only had one touchdown all year, Derek, and then he had this postseason touchdown. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised. He had two postseason touchdowns last year for the Chiefs. Maybe January and February is MVS season. Maybe we can get that going. I don't know.
Okay.
I'll have to see.
So you brought up something just a minute ago, if I can touch on. So there was the announcers, by the way, I could go on a 90-minute rant on the announcing in the Super Bowl, but they were talking about how the Eagles last year had the brotherly shove, the tush push, whatever you call it, when they were in the Super Bowl. And so when it comes down to like fourth and two, fourth and one, fourth and inches, stuff like that, that the Chiefs don't have that kind of play. They have Blake Bell in their tight end room. Blake Bell, when he was at the University of Oklahoma, the starting quarterback for 2 years at the University of Oklahoma, they had what's called the Belldozer, and he ran a version of the brotherly shove. Why they don't run that out there? Why don't they don't create that to even try in the? I mean, I guess you don't want to take Patrick Mahomes off the field, but at the same time, you have a guy who has had success with that when he was in college, much like how other guys have success at quarterback and throw the ball to legacy NFL types. So I really do think the Chiefs probably need to institute that next year. You know, maybe maybe the greatest center in NFL history can start coaching next year and can come in and coach the Chiefs where his brother plays and teach them how to do a brotherly shove.
That's possible. I will say we do need to put some respect on it. That's three-time Super Bowl champion Blake Bell. So make sure he gets all the credit that he deserves here.
I agree. Like, I mean, if we're going to look at the greatest tight ends of all time and you're saying, hey, there's a guy with three rings, cool. You know, we're talking about Travis Kelce. No, I'm talking about Blake Bell.
Facts. They didn't win one the year after that when he left and he was a Dallas Cowboy.
Sure.
You know, so I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Mr. Jennings again, because Juwan Jennings had another critical moment in this game. It was the one right before the missed PAT. You know, the Chiefs had taken the lead. They were up 13-10. Another excellent drive put together by Shanahan. Purdy hits Juwan Jennings, who, like, it was a 2nd and 9 from the 10-yard line. Like, I was like, ooh, he might be short of the first down. Ooh, I don't know what he's going to do. And then, like, all of a sudden it was like, those Chiefs players are on the ground and Juwan Jennings is in the end zone.
Yeah.
Like, that was some strength. That was some strength. And, I know we were both talking about it before the podcast, but like when they announced, who should have been MVP at this point, I was like, let me go put some votes in for Juwan Jennings.
Oh,
passing
yeah.
touchdown, receiving touchdown. Like, that's an epic list. Like, who doesn't want to be on that list? So, I was happy for him there, as he got the last touchdown during regulation.
Yeah, I will tell you this. It was a really good route, a really good catch. He got it into the end zone. A really great shot. Look, we said it before, but I'll say it again. We had in our, Brody bets, and we'll talk about those in just a little bit, but will a quarterback win MVP? This was the closest that we've seen in a while that the quarterback should not have automatically gotten the MVP, because there was Jennings and there was McCaffrey. McCaffrey did some amazing things with his numbers. So, yeah, I think we got really close to that.
I mean, I think we can both say that it would not have gone to Purdy had the 49ers won.
Correct. Yeah.
Yep, we would have had the first non-quarterback MVP since 2022 when Cooper Kupp won MVP that year.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to think back when the last time we had, like, I think Butler won it the year that he intercepted Russell Wilson on the goal line. I don't, and I'm not 100% sure on that, but I remember it was quite a few years ago that that happened. I guess Cooper Kupp winning it for the Rams was probably, probably the most recent one.
I don't see Butler, so it goes Kupp. If I go back to 2019, it's Julian Edelman. And then before that, in Super Bowl 50, it was this guy named Von Miller.
Oh, you should never. Oh, yeah, I guess there was a couple of years of non-quarterbacks.
I mean,
because, yeah, Peyton Manning
three out of, like, the last several. So
yeah.
There's several for Mahomes and Brady and Nick Foles in there for the last 6 of the last 9. So.
Yeah, that's cool.
Absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and get to the game winner here, Derek, because I know that they talked about it, and it's something where it probably felt a little bit painful for Eagles fans, but it also felt like it justified a lot of the moves that Brett Veach made during the year. Hardman starts to go in motion, gets right behind Kelsey to where the defenders are supposed to switch off. Mahomes snaps the ball. Hardman turns, runs back the other way. Incredibly wide open. Catches it. And the Chiefs won the game. Hardman even said after that he blacked out a little bit. Kudos, I guess. It was a little bit interesting. Like, at least I felt like I saw this from Travis Kelce a lot during the game. Like, I don't know if he was banged up or hurt or anything like that, but, like, when it was a play that was clearly a running play and they lined him up like out wide. It was like step, step. Okay. I'm going to watch the
play. Yeah. Yeah. I'm watching this.
Like on that play call, he knew that the defender went with him and he just like started raising his hands and for the touchdown before Hardman caught the ball. Like you can see him like watching it on the big screen at the end of the stadium. Mm-hmm. Like the play's literally going on like 10 feet to your right, Travis. But Travis was doing his thing. He was having his moment. Clearly he knows a lot more about that than I do. I just enjoyed the motion and that motion is brutal when you have some of the fastest players who can do it. This time it was Mecole Hardman. Thoughts on this one, Derek?
Yes, Hardman started on the Jets this year, came over to the Chiefs after, you know, some quarterback drama up there. You know, Kelsey didn't even turn around to – he just knew that it was a touchdown. He didn't need to turn around, didn't need to watch, didn't need to look at it, just like he went and ran his route. Corndog is the play, and Corndog beat the Eagles last year. Corndog beat the Niners this year. Don't look at me like that. This is from Andy Reid's mouth itself. What was the name of the play? It was Corndog, and it works way too much against some of these defenses. Like, we're at the goal line. I wonder what they're going to run, and it just works.
It's a play for just getting a few yards when getting a few yards feels like one of the hardest things to do. But the Chiefs have it. They know how to run that one. And good for them. They needed it and they got the win. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about Usher, however you want to say his name. And get to the halftime performance of this because we love to have a little fun and talk about halftime a little bit. Just to be clear, on our prop bets, I did get that yes, Alicia Keys did appear on stage with Usher. His first song was not OMG. It was Caught Up, Got Me Feeling So Caught Up. That's probably how, Marquez Valdes-Scantling felt when he caught the touchdown. He was like, oh, it's Caught Up. And, he did also perform over 9.5 songs with 14 total songs being performed, which was a big, big win for Derek. Derek, do you want to have any initial thoughts before I go on random Caleb thoughts about the show?
Yeah, I will say Usher is a very good dancer. He is a good singer and he was well hydrated. Those are my main thoughts on Usher in the halftime show.
Yeah, I was, as they kept going, I just kind of kept being like, how many layers of stuff does Usher have on? Cause True. It felt like he was having more wardrobe changes than possibly any halftime show ever. That includes, you know, ones with Janet Jackson. So, I mean, it just felt like it was a lot. It was changing a lot. You could tell that Usher was sweating profusely. So that's, I think, what you mean when you say he was hydrated, well hydrated.
He was like, so sweaty.
Like, this was a workout. This was a big time workout for him. He's not as young as he used to be, guys. And he went out there. Like I said, he did 14 songs. Derek, other than like the one that we knew was going to happen and we were thrilled for with, yeah, closing it out. Did you have a favorite that happened out there?
Okay. So, he did like 10 seconds of Confessions, which is my bop. It's just, it's my jam. If it comes on, if I hear it, it is. It's I gotta sing along with it, but he only lasted like the 10 seconds or so. So technically it works as it did. It was one of the songs he sang, but it was only for a little bit. And I really wanted like more of that. But, yeah, that's the song that I really wanted to hear. I got to hear a little bit of it at least.
That makes sense. I think for me, some of my favorites were, the duo or the duet when he sang My Boo with Alicia Keys, just because I remember that song. It's got some good, like, throwback thoughts for me. Mm-hmm. And, in a similar vein, it was, You Got It Bad.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. When you got it bad. And I wish that there would have been a little bit more, just almost, and I mean this in a not weird way, but like just more singing and soulfulness and not as much theatrics or performance.
That's exactly how I feel too. Like I, like just
like don't get me wrong. I don't need Usher to like stare into the camera and like sing into my soul. Maybe if John Legend did the halftime show, then that might happen. But like, I just wanted a little bit simpler, I think is what I want.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I wanted a little bit like. I like the dancing. He did a really good job dancing, so don't get me wrong on that. But I think there was, like, if on the percentiles of the time spent dancing, time spent singing, I would have preferred him to slow it down just a little bit and not have all the movement and just, I'm sitting in front of a microphone and singing.
Yeah, well, let's get into some of the guests that we had out there, because it was a bevy of guests, I feel like, for a halftime show, especially coming off of last year when it was, I pretty much think it was just Rihanna. So we had her, who came out and rocked the guitar for that part when Usher was doing literally a wardrobe change, because he had to put some clothes back on after going shirtless right before that. And we had Lil Jon. I already mentioned Alicia Keys. Will.i.am, of course, was there, which made sense for OMG. And then for, yeah, he joined in for that one. Ludacris with his hair completely froed out. Just love seeing that. And just a fun grouping to have for the halftime show. And I also have to just say, I don't know about you, Derek, because I know I'm a fantasy football guy. I had turned down for Watt being one of my fantasy football players, football team names for a long time. And so to hear that song, at the halftime show felt great to hear Lil Jon just kind of go, solo on that one.
Yeah, it was good. Another one of those that I find, very entertaining. So, I will say that, as we're watching the halftime show, my wife looks at me and says, "Is that the guy from the peanut butter commercial?" Speaking of Ludacris, he recently had a peanut butter commercial where he had like dreads. And then as he's, rapping, like his hair starts to come out into like a fro. And so we could see like, you know, they had the same fro in the halftime show. And, I was like, yes, honey, that is the same guy from the peanut butter commercial. He has done so much, recently with the Fast and Furious movies and, State Farm, I think, in there as well. So, like, I don't think people remember Ludacris as the artist. He's more the actor now, and good on him.
Yeah, I will say that I was not expecting the roller skating throwback that happened during the halftime show either. When they came out and did that, I think that might have been preferable to me than all of the dancing. I just enjoyed I feel like an old man saying this stuff. I feel like I enjoyed the retro vibes of the roller skates on the stage compared to some of the just original dancing that was going on.
Yeah, I thought it was a well-placed piece, but once again, I want... It was a show. It was not a performance. It was a show. And, you know, if that's what you're putting together, cool.
So I'm looking back, Derek. Last couple of halftime shows, we had Rihanna. We had the one in L.A. that had Dre, Snoop, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar. 50 Cent showed up. We had the one before that in Tampa. We had The Weeknd. Very memorable halftime show from The Weeknd. I feel like we still see memes from that popping up all over the internet. And like before that, we had Shakira, Jennifer Lopez, Maroon 5, Justin Timberlake, Lady Gaga, Coldplay. And then if we go all the way back to 2015, we get Katy Perry with the good old Left Shark moments. Does this have anything that you feel like is going to jump off and be like memorable about this halftime show?
The only thing that I would say is memorable is the costumes. So the roller skating purple and blue has been memed all over the place with like Globo Gym from what was that?
Dodgeball.
Dodgeball, thank you. Dodgeball and Underdog Story. I've seen that just about everywhere. This is certainly for the 30-somethings, 40-somethings, because they have four skates on there instead of rollerblades. I've seen a lot of stuff. So is the skating part is probably going to be the thing that people remember the most. But other than that, you know, the costumes probably.
I just think I look at it and I go, I don't think that I would sit here and say it was great. I don't think I would say it was awful. I felt like it was very down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that is bad or good. I just felt like it was okay. Like if you would have said, this is what you're getting, I would say, yeah, that's fine. Like I've not been driven to go back and like rewatch the halftime show. I have done that sometimes over the last few years where I was like, man, there was a lot of stuff that was going on and I need to figure out what happened. No, not feeling that way this year. It was good, but I don't think I would put it in the category of great.
I would say that this one, like, you have a really hard time with, because you're a superstar and because you were asked to do the halftime show, you don't have people who are going to tell you no. I think this halftime show could have used an editor. Like, what are we actually, you know, like, let's put this... We said yes a lot to a lot of different things, and I think it really could have used a step back from the whole thing and what are we actually here for. And if we're here for the pageantry of everything, then I guess that was successful. If you're there for the singing of Usher, then I don't think it was successful because there was so much movement. There wasn't a whole lot of focus on him singing, and I don't think he sounded really great on there. I don't think he sounded like Usher. I don't think he sounded like what I've heard in the past in both CD forms and on live performances. Like, he's got that talent. I just think there was too much there to really focus on the singing.
I think that makes sense. I think it makes a lot of sense, Derek. Let's go ahead. Let's switch it up. Let's look back at our thoughts from before the game. Thoughts about our impact players. Thoughts about our prop bet draft. Derek, where do you want to start on the impact players? Because I feel like there's a lot that could be said about these in general.
Yeah, so I think the biggest one for me is we hear about Trent Williams. He's maybe the best offensive lineman in the league right now, definitely top three, depending on where you want to coin flip there. But I will say that in the first quarter, he cost his team a drive. So he had back-to-back penalties, one for holding and one for false start, 15 yards in back-to-back plays. And, you know, one, you don't want to be behind the sticks in any football game, but you definitely don't want to be it versus this new upstart Kansas City defense. Now, throughout the rest of the game, played great, didn't have a whole lot of mistakes out there. You know, he had never been in a Super Bowl before, so some of those nerves are going to get to you. The one thing that a lot of people don't really understand, and is something that really affects teams once they get there, is the timing of the football game is completely different than every other game you've played in the regular season. So halftime is longer, so you have less time of you have more time to get cold, basically. The beginning of the game has a lot of pageantry and all that kind of stuff. And I've used pageantry like 5 times in this podcast. I'm sorry. I need a thesaurus for Christmas next year. But, like there's a lot of you're on the field, but you're not doing anything football related, technically. So there's a long lead up. And so when you've got guys who've not been there before, they're going to make those mistakes in the early part until they actually settle down into the football. And I think so what we saw a little bit with the 49ers.
I think what I'm hearing you say, Derek, is that there's just a lot of spectacle. And so, like, the Super Bowl is an event. So you're always going to get the commercial breaks. You're always going to get, you know, that longer halftime. Plus, it starts at a weird time. Like, it just is its own unique thing that you don't get any other week of the year. And that's okay, but that also is advantage Chiefs. They've done this more often and more recently. As far as I'm just going to jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I've got to give a ton of credit to Steve Spagnuolo for how he called the defense in this game. I know I picked Chris Jones, and if you look at the box score and you see that he had 4 tackles and 2 quarterback hits, you're not really realizing how impactful Chris Jones was on this game because he was disruptive. I feel like he was the main one who disrupted the third down play, in overtime when the 49ers were down in the red zone trying to get a touchdown. He disrupted things several times. Trent McDuffie, I know you had brought him up, but mm-hmm. He had 3 key pass deflections in this game. Some of them on, like, I had picked Debo out. I mean, you could call Ayuk as well. I feel like both of them were a little bit quieted down by McDuffie and Snead. And, like, we talked about Butker already. I think Fred Warner had a pretty good Super Bowl, but they were able to avoid him a little bit when Dre Greenlaw went out with injury, that non-contact injury running back out on the field. What a rough way for him to go down, and lose his Super Bowl day. But, Oren Burks played okay, but I think Fred Warner had a lot more on his shoulders from that point forward. I thought that it was, if there's one thing I regret, it's probably that we didn't pick Juwan Jennings. I mean, how are we supposed to know? There's always someone who rises up and you go, well, the law of large numbers says Juwan Jennings and Marquez Valdes-Scantling should not be the key players on this game. Like, you're going to tell me literally there's no rushing touchdowns in the Super Bowl either? Like, we're not getting a Pacheco or a McCaffrey rushing touchdown? All the touchdowns are through the air. Like, it just doesn't sound right.
Well, especially if you look back, like, here's the thing, that you have a lot of people who are, oh, here's a box score. Okay, well, let's see here. We have Christian McCaffrey had 80 receptions for, I mean, 8 receptions for 80 yards. Oh, well, that's pretty good. Okay, well, let's see. He had 22 rushes for 80 yards. Okay. He put up 160 yards. Oh, good job, Christian McCaffrey. He did a great job. I mean, we said it earlier that he was in the running for our MVP, and you know, if things play out a certain way, he probably could have been the MVP. But a lot of people who watch the game go back and look, why didn't McCaffrey have 110 yards? Why didn't he have 120 yards? Because they stopped running the ball after a while, and their offensive line couldn't move the defensive line anymore of the Chiefs. Well, all of a sudden, you know, this guy who has a really impactful game had the receiving touchdown. 8 receptions is a lot of receptions for one game, especially for the running back position. But the box score doesn't tell you how the game actually went. And I don't think, I'm trying to remember back, but I don't think the Niners were ever in a position more than once where it made sense for a rushing touchdown. There wasn't a,
they were never in like a major goal-to-goal situation. Juwan Jennings touchdown, pass, they didn't even make it into the red zone. And then if you talk about, like, later when he catches it, that's 2nd and 9. Like, they gave McCaffrey the ball on 1st and 10 from the 11. He got 1 yard. Like, and they had just failed to convert a 3rd and 2 with him just a few plays earlier. Like, the Chiefs adjusted their defense after one of those earlier drives. Leo Chanel, Mike Pennell. I think Mike was on the Packers at one point, like, just cause I remember him. And they would always say, big Mike Pennell. Like, we are not talking about someone who is small. Like when I double check, he did used to be a Packer. So go me, I remembered him. He is listed on here, Derek, as 6'4", 332, according to his Wikipedia page. And he's bounced around the league a lot. Like, he technically has 2 rings with the Chiefs, but he's been on the Falcons and the Bears in between now and then. Like, he's not always a guy that's there all the time. Like, they signed him to their practice squad in October. He wasn't someone who went through like mini camp and stuff like that. But Mike Pennell shows up, gets tackles, stops the run, and is impactful in stopping Christian McCaffrey in the Super Bowl. Like, but those are the players that I love to call out because it's like, who thinks of them? Like, you don't unless you know of them.
When everyone gets their shot sooner or later on the Chiefs, like, oh, okay, well, you're going to have 5 games a year where it's Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. You're going to have 3 games a year where it's Isaiah Pacheco. You're going to have a game or two of Rice. But then you're going to have a Carl Loftus game. You're going to have a Pennell game. You're going to have – and these guys step up in the biggest games because they're coached that way. I don't think I think we give a lot of credit to the players on the field, and they're making the plays. I completely agree with that. It's the preparation that goes into the into telling your team how certain times are played, and how you prepare your guys. And Spags prepared that defense. Truly did.
I think that's everything that I have that I want to talk about as far as our impact player draft. As far as our prop bets, I feel like we've talked about a lot of those throughout this contest. If anything, Derek, there wasn't a penalty for roughing the passer.
Literally where I was about to go. I was like, you have two of the most, you have Chris Jones, you have Chase Young, and you have Bosa on, Nick Bosa on that, and none of them got a roughing the passer call. Now, there were two plays in that Super Bowl that probably should have been, especially on Chris Jones, but it was a pretty clean game on that side. If you're telling me that the first sack in the Super Bowl at the beginning of this year came from Chase Young, I would tell you that you are cuckoo crazy. But that's who had the sack for the Niners was Chase Young. He was a good pickup. And you know, you don't run to the Bosa side, and Young's going to get it to you.
Exactly. Exactly. I just felt like, in general, like, of course, I was irritated that it went to overtime because I picked no overtime super early in the draft because this is still 58 Super Bowls and only two overtimes.
Yeah.
Ever. And I at least did get the under despite that because the I did have it being a low-scoring game. It was a nice low-scoring game. Thankfully, they do not need to kick PATs when you score in overtime. So, but let's go ahead and get to some of the critical decisions that kind of happened in this game. Derek, with the new overtime rules, knowing that both teams get the ball, it's not just if you go down and score a touchdown, the game's over like it is during the regular season. I'm not even sure why there's a clock per se, other than to keep track of how long overtime is going.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the 49ers going out, winning the coin toss, and receiving the overtime kickoff?
Okay, I have a very controversial take on this one, and I apologize to all of our listeners. I think Kyle Shanahan did it correctly. So, everything being said, his defense needed a rest. They were tired. There was no way that they were going to be able to go out there and stop what everyone was going to say was going to be a Patrick Mahomes touchdown. We saw it happen in real time. So everyone, you know, I guess in hindsight, it's, everyone wants to say it is, well, if you kick a field goal, you know, Patrick Mahomes is just going to drive down the field and get a touchdown. Well, cool. I don't know if you noticed or not, but there's 11 guys that I pay millions of dollars to who are paid to stop him from doing that. I also, you know, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I have a good defense. Like, up until the overtime itself, they were a good – this was a good defensive performance by the 49ers defense. Other than a couple of like deep balls, like the one down the field before the Pacheco fumble, that was really the only time they had gotten like gashed. There wasn't a whole bunch until that final drive by Mahomes. In the first half especially, actually probably the first three quarters, the defense was doing a really good job. If I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm going to put this on my defense. I want a rested defense. I know what my offense can do. And Mahomes had already thrown one interception in a tough position. They had and to steal Tony Romo's line here, passing lane integrity. For the entirety of the game, they didn't let Patrick Mahomes get outside, which is where he loves to make those really fun plays that we love about him. They had played a really good defensive game. And so go out here and make the Chiefs score a touchdown. You've done everything that you should have done. You, other than scoring a touchdown yourself, You're giving your defense the rest that you think they need. You're trying to go out here and score points so that it puts pressure on Mahomes to do something. If it turns out in the way that you're expecting, which is we kick a field goal, they kick a field goal, we now get the ball to go do what we want to do, then it, because that's one of the reasons that why he said that he deferred, or he took the ball first, I mean, is why he didn't defer, is taking the ball first, is because he wanted the ball third. He thought his defense could keep them from scoring a touchdown, and he wanted the ball third. And so, everything makes logical sense. It just didn't make sense in the game because Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. Plain and simple.
So, I hear you, Derek, and I think that you're making some solid points. And I think if I didn't hear all of these 49ers quotes that came out after the game of them saying that they didn't know what the overtime rules were or they didn't know how all of this was supposed to work, that I would buy more of the strategy of take it, we want to get a touchdown. If they get a touchdown, okay, we're going to go, we now have sudden death and we can do what we want. Don't get me wrong, you don't want the Chiefs to get a touchdown, you tie it up, and then the Chiefs have the ball with sudden death. That sounds horrible. Like, so I get that aspect of saying, let's take the ball first. I get the rest, the defense aspect. I think it's just that default college mode to me where you can't count that you're going to get a touchdown. You can't count that you know what you're going to need. And I don't know if it would have made a difference.
I don't think it would have made a difference.
I don't think that we get a huge different result in this game regardless. Maybe the one play that you could look at and say, maybe the Chiefs don't call it to go for it, is the 4th-and-1 at their own 34, where they faked the like zone read to Pacheco and Mahomes followed Kelsey, who he could have dumped it to, but then just ran up the field for 8 yards. Like, it was a 4th-and-1, but it was really like 4th-and-a-half. If the Chiefs have the ball first, I still think they're going for that. Like, it was not that far. And maybe that's just my opinion, Derek. You can tell me if you agree or disagree with that part. But then let's assume that all things are the same. The Chiefs still would have gone down and scored a touchdown. Then the question would just be, was it the right call for the 49ers to kick the field goal on 4th-and-4 from the 9? Do you pin, you know, the Chiefs back if you don't score, hope to get the punt, and then you can just go score yourself, you know, instead of kicking a chip shot and then having less of a field because you know they're probably going to get it at the 25 like everyone does in the NFL nowadays. You know, should they have had a, we're in 4-down territory down here, we need to get a touchdown. Did you disagree with the field goal call when they went out on the field, Derek?
No, once again, you take the points that you have. You don't want to put your second year quarterback in a position to, okay, well, our defense just gave up a touchdown. Go out here and you have to put up a touchdown or we lose. And I want to know, okay, I have 3 points. If I can stop Patrick Mahomes, which we've done a decent amount tonight, that we're going to win the game. I mean, you can have there's already been a fumble lost. You have a fumble loss, cool. The Niners are now Super Bowl champions. You have an interception. It's already happened once tonight. And that happens all the time when you are looking at, 2-minute drives or whatever. Like a team has to come back, from being down. There's bad plays have happened. There are, you know, jump balls, basically, like where, like, the linebacker, you're trying to force it into Travis Kelce and something like that. The, you know, Fred Warner could easily fight the ball away from a Kelce. He could fumble. There's a lot of things that you have. I don't get paid millions of dollars to coach football. And I get it. I'm not Kyle Shanahan, though I would love to hang out with him and his dad sometime, and just hear stories about, the 98 and 97 Super Bowls. But yeah, I don't disagree with what he did. I think it worked out just fine. You have guys that you're paying millions of dollars for to go stop. I mean, at least stop them from making a touchdown. Just don't let them score a touchdown. That's all it takes. Like, have them kick a field goal. Frankly, win it for your team. Like, I don't understand how that is a big ask.
And it isn't. I mean, we're talking about a defense that has given up one touchdown to Mahomes the whole game. They were stopping them the rest of the time. They had just stopped them at the end of the fourth quarter to send it to overtime.
Yeah.
We're not talking about a team that doesn't know what they are doing. And so I'm going to do one of my, I'm Caleb, and I'm going to like slightly say I agree and slightly hedge because I'm me and I do that sometimes. With the third down play call that they made where they were trying to go out there and, you know, get that route on the edge of the field to Juwan Jennings and like Purdy getting crazy blitzed up the middle. Like, if you say you're doing a screen or you say you're doing a draw or you're doing something that is not setting you up for fourth and four, I think fourth and four is a little too long for my liking. But if you can get it to, if you're playing third down knowing that you want to go on fourth, that's where I think maybe the call was wrong. Because I like being more aggressive. We will admit that we disagree on this a lot of times, Derek. Like, I don't mind them going for it on fourth down sometimes. But on this case, kicking the field goal was the right choice. Kicking the field goal on fourth and four was the right choice when you just saw your quarterback, like, run 10 yards backwards and get hit. Yeah. Like, I just wish there was, can we not try to do like a screen pass to McCaffrey or Juszczyk, maybe get George Kittle involved in the game with like a tight end screen up the middle. Like, I felt like, you know, even if you like, cause McCaffrey's going in motion on that play, like you don't even have him in the backfield to be a threat of a run on third and four. If you give me something else that I like better on third down, yes, go for it on fourth. On third down, when you got nothing, fourth and four is take the field goal.
I think a mesh concept works really well in situations like that where you have, you know, maybe put Christian McCaffrey in the backfield and do an option play where he's coming across your front and you hold or you hand off. And then as, you know, if you're holding on to it, then now you're looking at your receivers and probably the worst case scenario is you have Christian McCaffrey who has already got a whole bunch of yards receiving. You could just toss it to him out of the backfield. Or you've got a receiver open that would drop down to cover McCaffrey if they're worried about him. I think that is a, you know, or, you know, frankly, McCaffrey is a pretty decent blocker. You've got some options there as well. So, you know, we can go back and nitpick, I think it was a pretty good game called by Kyle Shanahan. I think there was just some execution things that weren't set up 100% the way they needed to be. And I blame the Raiders just because I can, because it's their stadium.
Nice. Just one other thing that I'll call out about this. Derek, what's shorter, getting 50 yards or getting 75 yards?
Let me get my ruler out, but just for heaven's sake, let's just say 50 yards because it looks like a smaller number.
Okay, good idea. So if they're there on that 9-yard line, I'm going to say Butker would need you to get 50 yards to win the game with a field goal.
Yeah.
You kick the field goal. Mahomes needed to get 75 yards to win the game.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Yeah, like, I mean, all the numbers, like, there's no way that you're going out here, because the answer is always the same. Well, Patrick Mahomes is going to go down there and score a touchdown. Well, if that's the truth, then just
forfeit. Why are we showing up? Why are we playing the game?
Yeah. Like,
Well, Derek, let's go ahead and let's get some things wrapped up with some final thoughts here on this one, because in general, I really love Super Bowl 58. When I was looking back at the recent Super Bowls, to me, I think that this is the best Super Bowl of the 50s, which of course goes back to the Broncos win over the Panthers. Granted, there's a lot of Patriots wins or a couple Patriots wins in there. I don't care for those. I just feel like this one, we had the overtime. I really feel like every play had an impact, whether it was on the offensive side, the defensive side, or special teams. Like, it wasn't a huge punt fest. We had records that were set. We had defenses that could force turnovers, and we had offenses that scored touchdowns when they needed to. Like, they played well under pressure, and especially there at the end of the game, any one play could have won the game. Either way. And the Chiefs came out on top. I loved it. I would sign up for that to be the type of Super Bowl we get basically every time, unless the Broncos or Packers are in it, and then as long as they're not head-to-head, I hope they obliterate their opponent.
I'll agree with you on that one. This is the most balanced Super Bowl that I can remember. So going into this game, and I mean, the game bears it out with a overtime game, which means the teams in the 60 minutes of play were exactly the same amount of points scored. So these are the two most balanced teams when it came to opponents. The Niners, I do want to take a quick step back when it comes to the 49ers. I am a bandwagon fan the last 2 years. Let me tell you this, folks. You want to slap down Kyle Shanahan. He should be fired. He can't win the big game. Blah, 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 blah. Do you know where Kyle Shanahan has ended his seasons the last 5 years? He has lost in the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. Like, I get it that he can't win the big game or whatever. But he gets his teams to the big game. Last year, no one would ever have figured out, no one could predict, hey, my starting quarterback is dead. Doesn't have an arm. We've removed his right arm. It's gone. The backup quarterback, whom you could still have a pretty good game with Josh Johnson there, he's going to get a concussion a couple of plays in. Oh, well, I don't put that on Kyle Shanahan. He can only do so much. This year, he came within, I don't even know how an extra point, maybe. He came within 1 point of beating the Chiefs to be, a Super Bowl champion. The Falcons 28-3 game, he had a 25-point lead. What were the Falcons defense doing? Because you're still part of the team. Like, oh, he lost that game to the Patriots. Yeah, but he still put up 28 points. I don't know what else you want out of your offense, but to give yourself a 25-point lead. Okay, well, maybe they can score an extra, touchdown or two after that 28 points. Yeah, but you still put up 4 touchdowns, and everything was going well for you. Kyle Shanahan is a really good coach, and Kyle Shanahan can get his guys there. There is a very thin line between a Super Bowl champion and teams like the 49ers. You just need the ball to bounce your way a couple of times. If, I'm saying this, if Luter does not touch the ball on that punt, the Niners are Super Bowl champions right now. If we do not have a guy blocked far enough back where the ball touches his foot, the Chiefs pick up that ball, that's where the touchdown came from. The game, everything else in the game being equal, the 49ers are champions right now, and we have a totally different conversation.
Yep.
It was a great game.
So, Derek, I've got to call this out because I saw someone mention this online. Do you know who Kyle Shanahan's coaching trajectory looks most like right now?
I think I know who you're about to talk about, and he likes to wear red and eat barbecue and hamburgers.
Yeah, Andy Reid. He lost 3 straight conference championship games.
Yeah.
In 2001, 2, and 3 with the Philadelphia Eagles. And then, of course, in 2004, he got the Eagles to the Super Bowl that they lost to the Patriots by 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're talking about a head coach who clearly at this point we would say is a Hall of Famer. We're talking about a head coach who is legendary.
Yeah.
Don't set yourself short-sighted by wanting to move on because of random bounces of the ball.
And Andy Reid
not the right
looks,
call.
Yeah, Andy Reid looks like an absolute, he's a great coach, and he gets people, he gets his teams ready, but over the last 6 years, he all of a sudden became a Hall of Fame coach. Like, you might have said that before this last, since he's had Patrick Mahomes, he might have been a Hall of Fame coach, something like that. But we all of a sudden have a different purview of him because of the team he's got in front of him.
I mean, when I look at his coaching record, he has more wins as an Eagles head coach than a Chief head coach, if I'm counting the regular season.
That's surprising. I didn't.
It's very close.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, stick with Shanahan for a bit. Derek, what were your final thoughts here as far as the Super Bowl was concerned?
So we have a lot of, every time that you get to the end of the year, you get to the end of the season, you're never going to have the same team that you had the previous year. But that being said, you're going to have the guys that, most of your guys are going to be there next year. You've got a couple of bigger names that need a contract, but this is I'm going to call this the beginning of a dynasty. And what I mean by that is not that the Chiefs are going to go on a Patriots level run where they're going to win, 6 Super Bowls or anything like that. This is the beginning of the cheap superstar for the Chiefs. Because this was a rebuilding year, a quote unquote rebuilding year for the Chiefs, a lot of people have them left for dead in late November, early December. They're not going to sniff the AFC Championship game. You know, Patrick Mahomes is not going to go to the AFC Championship game, this year. They just don't have the team, bad coaching, blah, blah, blah. Maybe Eric Bieniemy was a real reason behind, why they had so much success. You know, a lot of things came out this year. All of a sudden, hey, we won the Super Bowl we don't have real big named, wide receivers. We've got, up and comers. We've got guys we've drafted recently, and guys that we can just kind of pull off the street. Well, all of a sudden, you're going to have maybe some older receivers that are looking to get a ring before they retire in the next, 3 years or so. All of a sudden, you get them for cheap so that you have space for other guys to get signed. It's what happened with Brady when he was in New England. You had the Randy Moss years. They had homegrown talent with Edelman and Amendola, Gronk, other tight ends that were really talented, and they drafted well, all that kind of stuff. But they were able to get some of their guys with hometown discounts and with ring-chasing guys that helped them a whole bunch. And so I think this is the beginning of the Chiefs' version of, we're going to be able to bring in some older guys, experienced guys on the cheap that could probably help us get to the third in a row.
I like it. I like it, Derek. You're talking about a three-peat, and I haven't heard good words like that in a long time. Makes me remember Shaq dancing and rapping on stage with the Lakers, because I am an old man. And that's why I like Usher singing the Super Bowl halftime show. That's why I like low-scoring football games. That it's just all intense. But that's where we're going to close this one out, my friends. I do want to let you all know, as a programming note, Derek and I, we've made it through the season. We are going to take a week off next week because we're tired too. We've been trying to crank out content. We try to do it regularly for all of you. It's fun. We enjoy it, but we also need to be able to take a break after the Super Bowl. So on behalf of my wonderful co-host, Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren. Thank you for listening, and y'all have a good one. Bye.
Bye, guys.